Step inside an art exhibit in Normal, reflecting the influence of Japanese art and culture.
There is a certain amount of luxury to be able to just really enjoy something that's visually delightful.
You'll meet multimedia artist Jenny Knable next on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm John Norton. Also on Sound Ideas today, you'll hear about a show at the ISU Planetarium that looks at how ancient civilizations wove myths around the stars.
And even if at the time they didn't see some of those myths as true stories, they did see them as truths.
A preview from Planetarium Director Thomas Wilmich. And today is Arbor Day. You'll hear about a deeper connection at the root of some Ecology Action Center tree planting efforts. Those stories and more follow a Bloomington Normal News update, which is just ahead. This is WGLT Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. Hear My Story continues with local patient Bill McKay.
So she put those things on and all of a sudden, poof, it was a full, rich sound that I could finally hear. But I remember having a tear in my eye because it was all of a sudden, why did I wait so long?
Bill's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
From the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm John Norton. Today, the nation celebrates Arbor Day and the power of trees. What better time to check in on the Ecology Action Center's Tree Corps? The nonprofit's army of volunteers has the ambitious goal of planting 10,000 trees a year for 10 years. One big piece of this year's effort is a memorial to one of its own with the Mike Hall Tree Project in Lexington. WGLT correspondent Michelle Steinbacher has more.
It's a breezy April morning under clear skies here at the Parklands Foundation Lexington Preserve, and dozens of volunteers, donning reflective vests, have fanned across a field. It's a Tree Corps work day, one of many planned this spring by the nonprofit Ecology Action Center. Some volunteers carry satchels of seedlings and marker flags. Others hold dibbles, hoe-shaped tools used in tree planting. Kendra Pates, an art gallery director, and her daughter Mia, a junior high school student, are part of the crew.
This is the third row that we're working on.
Mia just turned 12, so this is the first time she's actually able to come help plant.
I helped with tree planting last year, so that was my first experience with a dibble bar or even hearing that term.
It's to like make the holes for the trees to go in.
Ecology Action Center Executive Director Michael Brown says for the environmental impact, it's important to use native trees.
We have thousands of these native bare root seedlings that we've prepared ahead of time, a nice mix of oaks, hickories, pecans, hazelnuts, and other native species.
Tree Corps' goal is mighty. Gather an army of community volunteers to plant 100,000 trees across McLean County within a decade.
10,000 trees a year for at least 10 years in a row. So here we are at year three. It's been wildly successful so far.
Brown says the Tree Corps already has surpassed 24,500 plantings. So it's not only on track, it's surpassing its goals. The Corps launched in 2021 as a way to celebrate the Ecology Action Center's 50th anniversary. The Normal-based center works in tandem with many community groups to handle the massive undertaking. The Parklands Foundation is a key partner. Others include Heartland Community College, the Master Naturalist, and the Bloomington Normal Water Reclamation District. So why do these groups think it's so important to focus on adding trees to the community? For starters, they help provide watershed protection, increase wildlife habitat, and create shaded recreation areas. But Brown says the main reason for launching the Tree Corps is to help offset air pollution by sequestering carbon.
The backstory behind all this is a lot of information and data on air quality locally.
He says the community is close to exceeding national ambient air quality standards for ozone, an air quality pollutant.
Ozone is very closely correlated with public health issues such as asthma, respiratory disease, COPD, a whole host of respiratory issues.
Some areas of the community are in need of something Brown calls tree equity. Data collected on air pollution in the area shows certain parts of the community are facing poorer air quality than others. He says that calls for community members to band together and focus on the idea of environmental justice, putting more trees in the areas where they're needed. Brown says the west side of Bloomington and North Normal are two of those areas. So the Tree Corps plans smaller projects throughout those spaces this spring. The Ecology Action Center is working with partners now on a community energy strategic plan. That's supposed to provide clearer data on how to move forward addressing greenhouse gas emissions and other issues of environmental impact. In the meantime, Brown says he intends to keep recruiting volunteers for the Tree Corps and focus on meeting the group's goals. The project now has a dedicated coordinator, so Brown says he expects that it will only get bigger.
And so from here, it should even get better, get more organized, and maybe even go bigger in the future.
The biggest tree planting this year is the Mike Hall Tree Project back at the Parklands Lexington Preserve. 5,000 trees, half this year's batch, will be planted to honor the memory of the longtime public servant. He died in January after a fight with cancer. Hall worked more than two decades for the town of Normal, most of those as public works director. The 67-year-old Normal resident also had key roles at the Parklands Foundation and the Ecology Action Center. Brown says the Mike Hall Tree Project has brought several groups of volunteers to the picturesque spot off Route 66. Among those have been Hall's own family, including his wife, Chris Hall. Brown said Chris Hall called the preserve a perfect setting for the memorial.
It's right next to the highway, and Mike was an engineer. So we've got the traffic, and we've got nature, and we've got trees, and we've got people out there having a good time and making it a better place.
Key to making the Tree Corps sustainable is a mix of volunteerism and philanthropy. The group recruits tree teams from church and other community organizations. Those handle 100 tree plantings. Brown also encourages individual volunteers, both experienced and novice, to look into the Tree Corps workdays this spring. That's how Denise Mendoza from Normal found herself at the Lexington Preserve. She says people shouldn't let a lack of experience stop them.
I'm new. This is my first time, and I'm really happy because I really enjoy this. And we plant like 50 trees today.
Mendoza made some new friends. She and Kathy Gossard spent a morning digging holes and placing the seedlings in the ground. Brown says even just volunteering a few hours can help the nonprofit with its planting goals. I'm Michelle Steinbacher.
You can learn more about Tree Corps volunteering on the Ecology Action Center website. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. It took cannabis less than 3 years to become a billion-dollar industry in Illinois. When recreational marijuana became legal, demand soared. So too did the demand for educated cannabis workers. But where will they come from? Alex Degman from IPR takes a look at some of the new cannabis programs being offered at colleges and universities around the state.
I'm walking into a building with its owner, Dan Schmalzoff, that 15 years ago, when I graduated from Western Illinois University, was Macomb Skateland. It's had other uses since then. He's tried making it a music venue, an upscale dining concept, but the budget impasse during the Bruce Rauner years was particularly hard on Western and Macomb, so Schmalzoff had to close. He says he wants this space to now be a booming cannabis business. So far, he has five out of the $7 million he needs, but once he opens, there's another problem, finding qualified workers.
I would like to train people in this industry because I do have access to people like Shelby Hennings. That's just phenomenal. I mean, the knowledge that man has is just ridiculous.
Shelby Hennings, an assistant professor of sustainable horticulture, is behind one of Western's recently introduced minors, cannabis production.
This is a black light, but it's a UV sterilizing light. And it's way stronger than any party black light you might ever see.
This is the track you'd take if you want to be a grower. People have a lot of class choices, like Horticulture 357, cannabis production. But you can also choose from others, like hydroponic plant production and crop biotechnology. Henning says cannabis won't be legalized twice, and now's the time to get in.
I mean, you can be the Rockefeller of cannabis right now if you get in, if you position yourself correctly. And I think anybody that gets in and does that, especially with a degree that gives them like the calling card to say, hey, I've got something more to offer than a standard person. That's what this program gives them.
Cannabis production is run through Western's agriculture department, but a separate minor, cannabis and culture, is run through the College of Arts and Sciences. That track is not focused on growing. Instead, it offers core courses like the anthropological study of cannabis and another called From Magic Mushrooms to Big Pharma. They're also planning a study abroad trip to Amsterdam. Henning says he works with people in the industry to offer real-world opportunities. The production minor requires a 3-hour practicum where students volunteer at a grow facility.
The idea there is hopefully with that integration of these young students, you know, that are just about to graduate, with the skills that these employers told me they want in a graduate, here is one right now trained, and you can just cherry pick these people.
Partnerships like this are crucial because marijuana is still federally illegal, and allowing it on campus could jeopardize federal education funding. Nature's Grace and Wellness, with its grow facility in nearby Vermont, Illinois, is working with Western and another school in Macomb, Spoon River College. The company's chief operating officer, Tim O'Hearn, says the size of their operation quadrupled when recreational cannabis came on the market. They approached Spoon River to help the school craft the course. And given his needs, there is a pretty good chance he'll hire program participants.
It demonstrates a lot to us. A, the person is specifically seeking out a job in cannabis and have a degree of, you know, passion and interest in the field.
Nature's Grace is giving Spoon River $100,000 to help students offset the cost of the course. Other Illinois schools are developing programs too. Southern Illinois, City Colleges of Chicago, and the U of I in Urbana, just to name a few. Back at Western, 24-year-old Sam Piscatello is graduating in December. He was considering well-known programs in Michigan and California, but chose Western to be closer to home. While he readily admits he wants to make money, his interest in it started by watching some medical benefits in his own friends and family.
I just hope people actually are in this industry for the plant as well. It's not just money. People actually have to care about the quality of the plant instead of just pushing out product.
Even with that high interest level, there's a lot that needs to be done to develop an industry that works for everyone. I'm Alex Degman.
You can find more statewide reporting from Alex Degman and the rest of our Springfield Bureau on the state news page at WGLT.org. Thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton here on WGLT. The current exhibition at Heartland Community College's Joe McCauley Gallery offers modern takes on the Japanese ukiyo-e movement. It also shows other ways Japanese arts and culture have influenced U.S.-based artists. WGLT's Lauren Warnicki stopped by an artist reception earlier this week to chat with two of the four artists featured in the show.
Through May 11th, The Floating World highlights four artists from various cultural backgrounds, all of whom are influenced by Japan, including two who work in central Illinois. Japanese-American artist Nishiki Sugawara Beda of Dallas and Japanese printmaker Erica Shiba are also part of the show. Shiba grew up in Hong Kong and is now based in New York. Veteran Peoria printmaker Kathy Crawford and multimedia artist Jenny Knavel each contributed works to The Floating World, though neither woman is Japanese. As a relief printmaker, Crawford uses plywood to make her large-scale prints.
Prints have a unique texture and surface quality that I just find more interesting than painting. I was a painter at Ohio State University as an undergraduate student until I took my first printmaking class, and then that's all I wanted to do was printmaking. I like the fact that I can sell my art and keep it too, exhibited in more than one place at the same time. And prints are more affordable, which makes them more accessible than other art medias.
Her 35-year career includes many landscapes, often inspired by her travels. But there is also a nod to 19th-century ukiyo-e printmakers in Crawford's work.
There was a new growing middle class who could afford art. They never could afford art before, and prints were more affordable than paintings. And so the ukiyo-e printmakers were, I mean, they really did achieve celebrity status. I don't know if this is actually true, but I like the story anyway, so I'm going to tell it. Apparently, the earliest Japanese prints came to the West, to probably Paris, as packing material for Japanese knickknacks. And the Impressionists fell in love with them. They just thought they were the most beautiful things they'd ever seen, and they started collecting them. And if you are ever lucky enough to go to Giverny in France to see the Monet house and gardens, his house is filled with ukiyo-e masters.
Crawford contributed prints representing water and koi fish, created with a different Japanese technique of printmaking called mokulito, or lithography on wood.
I like working with images of the landscape, and I've always been attracted to water. Water images have been a recurring theme. Water is our most important resource, and for me, it's a place of replenishment and invigoration. It's where I get rejuvenated.
Western Illinois University professor Jenny Knavel is a textile artist inspired by kimono patterns in the quilts she has selected for this show. Each quilt depicts horses Knavel encountered at a horse therapy farm near her home in Delavan, Wisconsin.
I'm a tall blonde woman. I'm not Japanese. I love pattern and decoration. There's an art period in about the 1980s they called P&D for shortcut of pattern and decoration, celebrating things that are much more, maybe in the past, especially with modernism, kind of, you know, set aside saying that wasn't as necessary. But I just love anything that's, you know, patterned and color and everything. So that's been very important to my art making in general. And I really also appreciate anything from the natural world.
So the title of the show, The Floating World, I think is a nod, and I'm very inexperienced in this particular topic, but from what Wikipedia has told me, the title comes from the Ukiyo-e period in Japanese art, which is, I think, more influential in the United States than we might know, right? So from what I understand, this period is really, yeah, steeped in landscape, but also has subtle nods at kind of debauchery and yes, hedonism. Yes. And so where does this interplay come in your work?
Interesting. There is a certain amount of luxury to be able to just really enjoy something that's visually delightful. That's about celebrating color, that's about celebrating, you know, repetitious form. So there's in my mind, I would say, debauchery. Maybe that's as crazy as my world gets, I don't know. But it's a delight for me to work with it. And it is, I don't want to say not serious, but there is something playful about that. There is something that's not maybe as heavily conceptual as some work that you might see. There is thought, of course, in the design, but I also just, you know, delight in working with color and pattern and seeing how those interact and working with the subject matter I enjoy.
The Floating World, with works by Kathy Crawford, Jenny Knavel, Nishiki Sugawara-Beda, and Erica Shiba, runs through May 11th in the Joe McCauley Gallery at Heartland Community College. The gallery is free and accessible to the public anytime the college is open. I'm Lauren Warnicki.
You can hear Kathy Crawford discuss how woodcut relief prints are made on a recent episode of Heartland Community College's podcast called Random Acts of Knowledge. Visit WGLT.org for a link access to the podcast online.
Support for arts and culture programming on WGLT comes from PNC Financial Services. We're focusing on giving back as part of an ongoing commitment to the community PNC serves.
This is Sound Ideas, WGLT's news magazine. I'm John Norton. Many of us spend our day looking only at what's in front of us, the work at hand, the endless scroll on our phone, the next show to binge. Illinois State University's Planetarium offers a different way to see the world. The Planetarium is currently screening a Mayan archaeoastronomy show about how the ancient Mayans interpreted the night sky. In this interview with WGLT student reporter Jayla Johnson, Planetarium Director Thomas Wilmich explains the value of reconnecting with nature on and beyond Earth.
The thing that the Planetarium brings is just an appreciation of how beautiful the natural world is. You see the rhythms in nature and their beauty. You see the beauty of the night sky. You see how people before us looked up and into the night and imagined all sorts of stories that really were woven around their beliefs. Beyond that, astronomy brings a real excitement to people, particularly children. Kids get super excited about two things, dinosaurs and the stars. And, you know, start talking astronomy and pretty soon, after the shows, kids will come up and say, hey, did you know about this satellite or about this space mission or about this planet or that asteroid. Kids get so excited about this. And although I don't expect those kids to grow up and be professional astronomers, they may well go into engineering or education. No matter what they do, at least they have an appreciation of the natural world around them.
What is the difference between an astronomy and archaeoastronomy show?
Some of our programs delve into mythology. Shows like the Mayan archaeoastronomy show, as the name implies, we look back at the way the ancient Mayans viewed the night sky. At the same time, some of our shows look at science and our understanding of the universe today. Those shows, immersive just like the Mayan show, but where the Mayan show is art, colorful artwork filling our dome, in the more science-based shows, we actually take you to distant worlds. So you'll fly past the moon, you'll travel to Mars and stand on its surface, you'll delve deep into the Milky Way galaxy and seeing nebulae, the birthplace of stars, seeing star clusters, both open star clusters and the majestic globular star clusters. We travel out beyond the Milky Way to visit other galaxies as well. We look both forward in time to the ultimate fate of the universe, and we look back to the origins of the universe.
Where does planetarium shows originate from?
Those programs are professionally produced, and they come from all over the world. The Mayan show comes from a major planetarium down in Mexico, and we run shows, we have a great many shows that we run that come from the European Southern Observatory. And those shows are not just about the southern sky, but they look at things like the entire universe, the program From Earth to the Universe. It's a tour of the solar system. We visit each of the planets in turn, including some of the minor planets, worlds like Ceres, the first dwarf planet ever discovered, and Pluto, the best known of the dwarf planets. Beyond that, though, the show then goes out and explores the Milky Way galaxy. We look at star clusters, we look at the nebulae, the birthplace of stars, and then we travel out beyond the Milky Way to visit the universe. We see galaxies, we even go back to the time of the Big Bang.
Why is it important to learn about astronomy?
It gives us an appreciation of our past. You know, we can look back and see how it is we've come to understand the world today. And sadly, a lot of us have lost that sense of nature. One of the things the planetarium does is it looks at the rising and setting of the sun. At the end of every show, we bring up the night sky and point out some of the bright stars and constellations. And you begin to get a sense of the wonder of the night sky, just how beautiful it is, the stars. And you start to understand how it was that the ancients, they looked at the stars and wove reality, but they wove their myths around those stars. And even if at the time they didn't see some of those myths as true stories, they did see them as truths.
That's Thomas Wilmich, director of Illinois State University's Planetarium. Its current show is Mayan Archaeoastronomy, Observers of the Universe. It runs this weekend and next. Wilmich spoke with WGLT student reporter Jayla Johnson. And that's Sound Ideas today. WGLT's news magazine is made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org, part of the NPR network.